You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about unity and shared humanity during the COVID-19 pandemic and how faith communities are responding. Wisconsin religious leaders across faiths came together last night for a live-streamed worship service called Together in Mourning and Hope. It was Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Sikh, Buddhist, and Unitarian faith leaders together with music and prayer. The Wisconsin faith Voices for Justice is hosting a similar event tonight on Facebook. Is this an opening for faith groups to cooperate regardless of belief systems? Where do you see faith groups working together in these difficult times? We're at 800-642-1234. Pastor Bridget Jones is the leader of Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior. Pastor Jones, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good to be on.
And we have Janine Mohajer, Senior Director of Leadership at Interfaith Youth Corps based in Chicago. It's a national nonprofit working to build collaboration between people of many faiths. Janine, welcome to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Help us understand, Janine, what multi-faith work is. What does it look like to you?
Multi-faith work really looks like thinking about creating a vision for this country where people from different worldviews, both religious and non-religious, can come together and build common community. And for me, that's really about how do we focus on building our relationships and strengthening them, and then transferring those relationships into action. And that really, I think, looks many different ways, especially in current moments like we are in today, when we are in need of leadership that creates community and creates a space for people to bring their best selves to answer the needs of their communities.
You're working on the 10,000 Bridge Builders campaign. What is the goal of that work?
The 10,000 Bridge Builders campaign is really a response that IFYC has come up with as a recognition of this particular moment where our country is going through multiple pandemics, if I may call them that, and there is a need for leaders to really bring healing and bring conversation and create community that leads us to create change. And right now is the moment for young people, but also for us to look at this moment as an intergenerational space where people can come and really bring the gifts of their religious traditions, of their worldviews, of their families, and create a common, what we would, you know, refer to as Dr. King's beloved community, where there's honest conversation, there's, you know, common good that is being built by the people who live in the spaces that they come from.
Pastor Jones, how is your faith community worshiping right now and reacting to these times?
We are still online. We, out of kind of an abundance of caution, so following the CDC guidelines, and then the Wisconsin Council of Churches also put out a really helpful document giving guidelines for when we might go back and what that might look like. And so in our June council meeting, the leaders of our community will begin to figure out what it might look like and what our timeline is. But right now we're still doing confirmation, Bible studies, fellowship, and worship all online.
You know, we talked in the earlier days of the pandemic in March. How have your congregants been holding up? And there is so much to talk about and so much, I'm sure, as you would say, to pray about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think people are a little, they're definitely less enthusiastic than they were back in March. Back in March, it seemed like, oh, this will be just like a short thing and we'll get through it and it'll be fine. And as the pandemic has continued, you know, people are getting a little more discouraged, a little more antsy. And then now, of course, things are different again. I think people are feeling, some people are feeling confused because we haven't been having those conversations around race that we should have been having earlier. People are feeling disheartened about some of the hatred and violence, and still, you know, discouraged and worried. And it's a whole mix. It's a lot to deal with for some people right now.
Is it more difficult to have those conversations when you're not in person, when people are not sitting together?
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about that this last week as I did preach about George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. You know, when you're preaching in person, you can look out in your congregation and you know who's like with you and got your back, and you know who's going to disagree with you. And during fellowship hour, you know who to go to be able to say, like, you know, we can still disagree and still be in relationship, and let's try to, you know, smooth things over. And when you're just preaching to your computer, it's an entirely different dynamic. And I'm talking to other clergy colleagues. I know a lot of us are feeling really convicted right now about the work that we meant to do earlier, but didn't. And so now it's going to be harder, but it's even more necessary.
We're discussing multi-faith solidarity in times of crisis and what worship looks like now with Pastor Bridget Jones in Superior and Janine Mohajer of Chicago's Interfaith Youth Corps. You can join in. Have you returned to attending religious services in person? What is it like? How is your faith community connecting during these times? How is it working? And what is being said? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Janine, how important is it to get youth involved in these multi-faith conversations?
I think it's extremely important to get youth involved in these multi-faith conversations, especially as we see that young people are craving a space to have honest conversations and also a space to create change. One of the blessings of the work that I do is really to be in community with a lot of alumni who have been through Interfaith Youth Course programs and are now young professionals out in the world. And seeing them respond in this moment has really been inspirational. We have, you know, a young man by the name of Amir Hussein, who's a dermatology resident out in Long Island, who is now basically a doctor in the ICU room for COVID patients and has been doing that for the last several months. We have another alumni who's a chaplain at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, who in this moment has been, you know, the person who is speaking with families, who is bringing solace to patients from outside of their rooms, because there's obviously they're sealed off if they have the COVID infection, and is doing that not just for her religious community where she was trained, but also doing it for a multi-faith community where she's able to answer that need for families across the spectrum of religious belief. And we see young people doing that. We see them, you know, on the streets calling for very difficult conversations to happen in our community to create change in this particular moment following the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And those are all young people who are activated. And it's increasingly important to have them as part of this movement. And they are part of the movement. They are part of the conversation already. And they are leading that change already.
Do you see faith as part of that conversation?
Absolutely. I think faith institutions, you know, just like every conversation, there can be harm that comes from faith institutions, but the amount of good that comes from faith institutions is really salient for me in this particular moment. Just to tell you a really personal story, you know, my family lives on the south side of Chicago, in the Hyde Park Kenwood neighborhood, and just a few days ago, as protesters were coming into our neighborhoods as well, and you know, the city had imposed a curfew, you know, we got a call from an activist group who was hoping to create a safe harbor in the neighborhood so that when, if curfew passed and if people were still on the streets, there was somewhere for them to go to be safe. And the people that we called in that instant to work with to create that conversation were all faith houses in the community. They were mosques, they were churches, they were synagogues, and ultimately a church, you know, opened their doors to allow people to come in and figure it out.
Janine Mohajer with Chicago's Interfaith Youth Corps, Pastor Bridget Jones with Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior, back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about coming together across faith communities in turbulent times. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin Council of Churches put on a live stream worship service last night with a renewed dedication to making society better for everyone. How is your faith community responding at this moment to the civil unrest brought on by systemic racism and the global public health crisis? Have you been able to work with other faiths, finding openings for cooperation, for understanding, and for change? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Janine Mohajer is Senior Director of Leadership at Interfaith Youth Corps, and Pastor Bridget Jones of Bethel Lutheran in Superior. They stay with us. Pastor Jones, how are you engaging the youth in your parish? What is that like?
Yeah, we were doing confirmation over Zoom for the past couple weeks. And that actually, that ended. And so now finding out, being able to reach out directly to our youth to be able to say, you know, what's going on? How are you feeling? How are you having these conversations? It's definitely trickier now. You know, in seminary, it doesn't say, here's how you tell one of your high schoolers that they shared a conspiracy theory on Facebook. And so beginning to have some of those hard conversations is definitely tricky.
Janine, do you have any guidance there? How do you engage young people in multi-faith solidarity when there is so much anger and there is so much confusing information?
Yeah, so one of our alumni, her name is Jennifer Bailey. She's an African-American pastor and is the founder of the People's Supper. She has a quote called, "Relationships move at the speed of trust, but social change moves at the speed of relationships." And I think what's really important is to create relationships, to build relationships with young people where create a space where we can hear the concerns that they're bringing to the table. We can hear, what they're going through and what their stories are. And then finding a way to build from that is really important. And that piece of creating change and making something into an actionable thing in the community only comes when the foundation of that comes from relationships. It comes from spending time. It comes from, you know, the hard work and the invisible work of really getting to know one another and being able to understand one another and understand not just our shared values, but also our differences. And there is a recognition of righteous anger in really important moments. And then there is also it's important to have the skills and strategies to then transfer that anger into action in our communities. And I think that's really at the foundation of how we both create a space to listen, but also then think about what comes next. What comes the day after the protest? How do we continue the conversation? How do we continue to build and to create a way to change behavior and bring sustainable action into communal spaces? Jen Bailey, who I mentioned at the onset of this question, is really someone who, you know, fundamentally shows us how to do that through this this initiative called the People's Supper, which she started after the 2016 election, where she started to create these tables of meals where people came together across lines of religious difference, of political difference, to really talk about what was compelling them in that particular moment, what was sitting with them in that particular moment, and to be able to hear one another and to build some of that relationship that is very difficult to build when we are as polarized as we are today.
And sitting down over food and a meal can also help the situation as well when you are able to gather and listen and you know, break bread together.
Absolutely. And sometimes that work gets, I think that work gets a bad rep, right? Sometimes that work gets criticized for being too soft or too easy. But I actually think that's really difficult to do. It's very difficult to sit down with someone that you know you have vast differences in opinion with and to try to find what is it that can help you build a relationship and then also call each other into change through that relationship building.
We're talking with Janine Mohajer, Senior Director of Leadership, which is a national nonprofit working to build collaboration between faiths. Bridget Jones is a pastor of a Lutheran church in Superior. You can join in. Do you turn to your faith community in these times? What are you looking for now? What words? What healing? How are you reaching out to faith leaders during this unrest? We're at 800-642-1234. Pastor Jones, the nation, of course, as you mentioned earlier, is just reeling after George Floyd. And you have been looking inward, saying, I personally haven't done enough. We haven't talked enough. How are you grappling with that? And what do you do with your congregation at this point?
Yeah, so part of it, that's kind of the beauty of the journey to anti-racism, is realizing that you don't have to pretend that you have all the answers. And I think that's one of the hard things about being a faith leader, is being like, well, I'm not an expert, and, you know, who am I to talk about it? But to be able to say, I need to be learning more, and from where I am, I need to be bringing people along on this journey. And Janine is talking about building these relationships in the church, or in all faith communities. It's one of the few places where people of different socioeconomic levels, of different political affiliation, different ages, still gather. And so that's it's actually a really great gift of the faith community. For me, it means a renewed commitment to growth and learning. So a book that's been on my list for a while but I haven't actually read it is Dear Church by Lenny Duncan. It's a love letter from a black preacher to the whitest denomination in the U.S., and that's my denomination, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I encouraged a couple other pastors in the area to read it with me, knowing that it is a difficult book to read but necessary. So kind of that dual work of my own learning and then those conversations and bringing people along with me.
Janine, what do you make of that in terms of how we do go about learning and growing through each other?
I think that's exactly the way we're supposed to be thinking about this, right? It's supposed to be we're not in this moment just to teach, but we are also in this moment to learn. And I think it's really important to center the voices of the community that is very much in pain right now, and to center their story and their experience. And for me, even similarly, this is a moment where I'm having a lot of really difficult conversations with my family, who are immigrants from India, with my Muslim community, who are a mix. You know, the Muslim community is one of the most diverse communities in the United States. In Chicago, especially in the city of Chicago, majority of Muslims are African American Muslims, and it's important for me as a Muslim from an immigrant community to really have very honest conversations about what it means to be a community that has some internalized racism, and how do we talk about that? How do we come to terms with that? And how do we really answer this moment with learning and then with sustainable teaching within our own families and circles first, and then, of course, through centering the stories of the African American community?
How do you broach those conversations with those loved ones who you love dearly, who may disagree with you?
I think for me, it really is about learning from myself first. So I'm doing a lot of listening in this moment. I'm doing a lot of paying attention to people in my community, my friends who are really at the forefront of this, who are teaching and are telling us what they need from us. There's a wealth of knowledge that's out there. It's up to us to really look for that knowledge. We shouldn't expect for someone to come in and teach us that knowledge. It's important for us to seek that out in order for change to happen. And we're having those conversations really honestly in our family, you know, starting with my own kids. My son is 9, is in third grade, and he has gotten a little insight into what's happening just because of the various actions that are happening around our home. And he is asking a lot of questions, and it's really important to set the tone of the conversation where, you know, we're teaching him to also listen and ask questions and to build solidarity and community and relationship with his friends, and to call out behavior call in behavior when needed, but really to show a lot of empathy and compassion, but also to to think about what comes next. How do you you know, change behavior? And for us, that has meant to really start at our home and then to move outward from there.
Pastor Jones, in the last moments we have, what does the summer look like for your church?
We don't know. Yeah. And that's kind of scary, but also really a gift to be able to say, whether we're gathering in person or continuing to gather online, that now we can be creative. Are we going to have a mixture? It's kind of an exciting time of innovation, but whatever it looks like, it's going to include a lot of conversation and a lot of learning and continued action and continued calls to join in the work that God is doing in the world right now to bring it closer to the kingdom of heaven.
Well, Pastor Bridget Jones, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
She leads Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior, and Interfaith Youth Corps' Janine Muhajer stays with us for the hour as we continue our discussion about faith. What role do religious communities have? Do they work together now in this time of crisis? What do you see in the future of interfaith work? 800-642-1234. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. American religious leaders across faiths are faced with the heavy burden of helping to heal two traumas right now: rising civil unrest driven by the police killing of George Floyd and the coronavirus pandemic. Clergy are offering words of solidarity as worship routines remain upended by the virus that's forced digital gatherings, outdoor gatherings. Have you returned to religious services in person? What is that like? How is your faith community connecting in this time? Are you involved in mission work or volunteerism? How is your faith leader talking about George Floyd? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234. We have Janine Muhajer, the Senior Director of Leadership at Interfaith Youth Corps. And now let's bring in Everett Mitchell, the pastor of Christ the Solid Rock Baptist Church in Madison. Pastor Mitchell, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, and glad to be with you this morning.
How is your community doing in this really challenging, difficult time?
I think this is probably one of the hardest and most difficult moments in my pastorate. You know, it's one thing to see the horrific images and live in the realities of being black and brown in our bodies every day, but not to be able to come together in community seems to create another burden on the church, especially my community, because we've always used the church as a place to come together to heal, to scream, to laugh, to vent, and to strategize next steps. So it's really causing us to, and my leadership team, to have to reorganize our thoughts around ways to bring our community together and keep them together during such difficult and inspirational times as this.
I'm sure no hugs, no handshakes, no holding hands. It must be so difficult to feel bonds and to feel support.
You know, especially in our community, the hugging is so healing, you know, for so many people, especially because, you know, I've tried to protect and make sure that our church is a safe space. So because of that safety, you know, that's where people come to let their guards down and allow for the human and raw emotions to come forth, you know, whether it's men, young children, women, you know, it's all across the board. And yes, we're missing that safety of connection, which is what we lose when we can't be in the same space together.
How are you delivering your worship services?
So we came up with we had to go virtual platforms. We really hadn't invested a lot in doing virtual platforms. You know, we may hit and miss. So Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and, you know, we're doing some outdoor services to do the Lord's Supper for families. And now this upcoming Sunday, we're going to start doing outside stuff because at first it does need to be put back in place. We need a way for people to come together. So we'll probably be outside in our cars in a parking lot just so we can be together, see each other.
Let's take a call now. Chris is joining us from Racine. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I go to the American Baptist Church in Racine on Lathrop, and we haven't had a chance to meet since it started. The pastor there has been most helpful in actually mailing out a sermon each week so that we can stay connected. And I think it's very important to, I say, kneel to heal. First, to acknowledge that there has been injustice. Kneel to validate and to join. And kneel because God is the one that can help bring us all together. And we can all stand together if we all kneel together.
Chris, thank you. Janine, the act of kneeling, what can it do?
I think it can bring bring us into an awareness of our moment, of where we are, of what we are facing. But also, maybe for me, kneeling is really about, you know, what happens when you get up, and to take that time to reflect and to be in prayer. But when you get off of your knees, what are you going to do next? And for me, you know, I take a lot of inspiration from young people who are coming out of their, you know, coming away from their religious traditions and really being inspired to work. So to tell you another story of one of our alums who put a box outside of her apartment in Charlotte, North Carolina, and invited her community to donate, you know, food that she could then deliver in a socially distant, safe way to the local food pantry. And within a week, collected an entire car full of groceries that she then drove over to her local pantry so that families in need could come and get groceries. And that to me is really the action that follows that kneeling is really where we can see how faith can bring so much goodness and so much community, even in times of social distancing, in the spaces that we are.
Pastor Mitchell, what do you see in the act and intention of kneeling right now?
Well, I think we always, in my religious church, we always say, you know, at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess. I think Colin Kaepernick gave us a way for us to think about kneeling as a way of protesting, to remind us of our civic responsibility to acknowledge injustices. But as our call also said, that, you know, we kneel, but we also get up to go back and fight. And the kneeling is a reminder of the injustice. The standing up is a reminder we have work to do. And, you know, when we think about the names of Tony Robinson, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, you know, Tamir Rice, it reminds us that the work is not completed. And the anger and the frustration that a lot of young people, as well as older, all generations are feeling right now is because the work needs to be completed. And yes, we will kneel and pray, but then we will stand up and start walking, you know, toward our crosses and picking them up and bearing the responsibility of ensuring that justice for all people happens in our community.
Pastor Mitchell, as you form the words and you find the words for your sermons, how do you go about writing them right now?
You know, quite honestly, you know, I don't really write a whole bunch of sermons. This is such unprecedented times. I'm really looking for the Spirit to kind of give us some guidance. So rather than writing, I spend my time just thinking about what is listening to my community and listening to what they want and responding to their intimate and immediate concerns as I think about what can inspire us to stay together. So each Sunday is really a way for me to, you know, let them know that we're still connected and there are still passionate ways for us to be connected, and reminding them, you know, in spite of losing their job, and a lot of my members are facing the evictions as the moratorium lifts, that we're going to still stay together to ensure that none of us fall through the cracks like we've always done.
Everett Mitchell, pastor of Christ the Solid Rock Baptist Church in Madison. We also have Janine Mohajer, who works for Chicago's Interfaith Youth Corps, and you as well. Are you involved in volunteerism or mission work through your church? Is your faith community working with another religious group to help combat an issue in the pandemic? How is it going? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Jenan, there was some pushback from some faith leaders about gathering restrictions due to COVID-19 earlier this year. How should we reckon with differing views on safety in religious communities?
Yeah, that's a really important question, and I'll be really transparent on where I stand on that. I think what's important is to take our lead from the experts on what is required of us in this particular moment. So for me, you know, how I pray and how I, you know, stand in community virtually or in person with my religious community, we also take the way that we go about doing that in the face of a pandemic is to really take our direction from, you know, experts in the medical field, experts who are studying the pandemic, who are studying the virus, who know what is safe and what is not safe. And I think it's really important. And I think it's a really important matter of faith, actually, how to think about the safety of the community that you serve and to create ways to connect that are, you know, socially distant, that are virtual. And it's really important for me to take that lead from experts in, you know, in the knowledge of what it means to be facing a pandemic.
When you hear these stories from your alums and around the country and world, there are many faiths and religious communities that are really committed to helping people in need. Where have you been uplifted right now? Have you seen the, you know, that work come to fruition as our world fights COVID-19?
Absolutely. I have been so inspired by the stories that we're seeing really coming from all over the world. You know, you see Sikh communities, Sikh Gurdwaras who are opening up and doing, you know, meal services, grocery services to their neighbors. And you see, you know, in my community in Chicago, there's a local mosque that is doing the same here where it's providing, you know, basic medical supplies and basic grocery supplies for families who may need it. You know, deliveries for senior citizens who may not be able to leave their homes because of high risk for COVID. We also see people functioning in a moment of need just in very personal ways, whether it's, you know, calling someone to check in. It's very difficult to be socially isolated also in this time. So even if you don't have needs that are, you know, needs of getting help or food, you also need, you know, sustenance through relationship, through connection, which is very difficult to do in the midst of a pandemic. We're also seeing how a lot of our young people are, you know, thinking about what it means to provide a space where mental health is really being championed, as the pandemic has, you know, shown that we're increasingly battling that as well. As we are sitting in isolation for, you know, in Illinois, we've been in shelter in place for about 2 months. So those are all the ways that we're really seeing this come to light. And for me, it's also how we transform spaces where people are coming in, where traditionally we would be in proximity to one another, you know, through personal interaction, through, as the pastor said, hugs and creating that sort of human connection. How do we transfer that to a virtual space, to a socially distant space? And we're really seeing people answer that in really creative ways as well, whether it's hosting, you know, a big Seder with your community or just creating these online spaces.
Jenan Mohajer with Interfaith Youth Corps in Chicago. Pastor Everett Mitchell leads Christ the Solid Rock Baptist Church in Madison. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our country's religious leaders across faiths, they're faced with this heavy burden of helping their communities heal and cope with the rising civil unrest and institutional racism in the wake of George Floyd and amid a global health crisis caused by the coronavirus. So where is your spiritual center now? How are you reaching out to friends and neighbors? What do you think about joining across belief systems to work for change? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We have Jenan Mohajer with Interfaith Youth Corps in Chicago and Pastor Everett Mitchell, who leads Christ the Solid Rock Baptist Church in Madison. They stay with us. Let's take a call. Chris is with us from Sun Prairie now. Hi, Chris.
Hey, I got a question for your guests. I hear the saying that we have more work to do But, you know, I'm 45 and I've got several almost adult kids. And all my life I have tried to treat everyone equal and raise my kids up to be respectful and do the same. And I don't believe that there's a government problem or a government solution. So other than raising up another generation that just believes everybody is equal and treats people by, you know, the merit of their actions, not the color of their skin, what else is this work that needs to be done?
Pastor Mitchell, let's start with you.
Well, you know, not only am I a pastor, but I'm also a judge here, and I also live in Sun Prairie, and, you know, you and I are close to the same age. I'm 43. There are so many inequalities that are built into our system. So, for example, in the court system, we have children who are placed in shortened school days, and shortened school days are when they have special education needs and are being denied free the same access to children being able to get the same resources that they need. I've seen that across the board for black, brown, and even low-income white children that are not being given the same support that they need because they don't have advocates to fight for themselves. We see a number of inequalities in placements for children. A lot of the children in our communities are not being served with the mental health services that they need, even when they're separated or receive the trauma-based work that they need. So there are so many different examples, and even just when it comes to George Floyd, and the ways in which communities of color have struggled to try to get some kind of transparency around policing, it's not just about those who are create crimes; it's also about those who are being treated like criminals, even when they may not. And how do you work with law enforcement as well as communities to kind of construct something that gives our communities the sense of safety? So those are just some brief examples of what we need to do, where there's work to be done. And that work could be done in simultaneously while you're raising a generation of morally thoughtful people who are looking at the content of individuals, but also still dealing with the insidious legacies of racism in many different systems in our community.
Janine, what are your thoughts there? What can Chris and all of us do today?
Yeah, I think that question is really important because I think what's important right now in the wake of that question is to really think about how are you listening to the African American community? How are you listening to what we just heard from the pastor? How are you listening to your neighbors and your friends and, you know, people who are in your community who maybe are experiencing the world a little bit differently than you are? And what is their story? And I think that's where we start to maybe come out of our own experience and our own worldview and are able to see when we see the world through the eyes of another person, we're able to see, you know, what the differences are maybe in the way that we've perceived each other. And that's important to then take into action and say and question, you know, what have I missed? What have I not seen because of the privilege of the space that I live in and those streets that I walk? What is not relevant to me? And to really kind of ponder that for a moment through the story of those who live around you.
Pastor Mitchell, I would imagine with you being a judge that you think, well, you know, there are things I can fix. There are verdicts I can make, but changing institutions is going to take more than me.
It does, but at the same time, you know, judges are given a lot of discretion to make decisions, what I call micro decisions on an everyday basis that help stem the direction. You know, one of the courageous things that I did as soon as I became a judge is I started to advocate and support the removing restraints off of children. We were bringing in black, brown, low-income white children in handcuffs simply because they were kids who got in trouble. And I would say, you know, that's not, if we want our children to live and live in a just society, we can't continue to add to their trauma. We can reduce it. And I've spent the majority of the last year or two really going across the state, really teaching people to think about trauma-informed ways to respond to the pain that a lot of broken children have endured, and breaking up the what I call the child welfare to juvenile delinquency to adult prison pipeline, which is operating in Wisconsin at such a horrific rate because many of the children are invisible to the majority of the community, like my brother who's in Sun Prairie. Because these children are invisible to others but visible to me, I made sure that I began to tell their stories and fight for them so that they could be able to have right. And then another quick example is, even like CCAP has been used to really you know, deny people all kinds of things from housing to employment. And I remember sitting on a panel as the judge saying to the committee, we need to make sure that any dismissed cases from CCAP are removed from CCAP immediately. But before that, you know, they will stay on the CCAP for 30 to 40 years, depending on what the nature is, even if the case was dismissed. So there are different ways that we can advocate and use our privilege for different ways. And I've chosen to use my position to really make visible those who are invisible in our community.
The CCAP, the online court records that are staying with a person for a long time.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry, I should be clear. Yes, the Circuit Court Access Program, which records every criminal, civil, divorce, family case that is filed throughout the state, can sometimes the general practice has been in the past to keep every case that is ever filed up on CCAP so everybody can see. But we were able to use our voice to support removing dismissed cases so that the 300,000 Wisconsinites whose cases have either been dismissed or they've been found not guilty can be removed from CCAP so that people won't assume they're guilty and then they have to prove they're innocent.
Janine, let's look at trauma-informed care for a moment and how faith leaders respond to people who have been hurt very deeply for generations. How do you begin to heal?
I think, first of all, it's really important, as Pastor Everett has mentioned, to be trauma-informed and to really do the internal work in our training of religious leaders to have that knowledge and that expertise, and then to bring that to their communities and to really think about, you know, what are the things that people that are triggering people in this moment? What are the things that are coming up for people in this moment? And to think about that training is really important in order to have that view of a trauma-informed response.
As we start to wrap up here, Janine, I'm wondering, what are you working on today and in the future weeks as the pandemic unfolds, as we see more civil unrest?
For us, it's really thinking about, you know, how are we lifting the stories of the amazing work that's happening that young leaders, young people are doing across the country. You know, recently I was in conversation with one of our alums whose family had been affected by COVID. Both of his parents were sick from it and were quarantined in their home and were in a very dangerous situation for a number of weeks. And, you know, they come from a Hindu background. Their family is from India. And they live next to a Pakistani family who's Muslim. And it was really this beautiful story of how their neighbors sort of, you know, dropped off food at their doorstep and left a prayer mat hanging on their door as a way to show care and concern for them. And that has really inspired this young person to now think about, you know, how he organizes a group of his peers to give back and to do that for others who are maybe also facing difficulties in the pandemic. And that to me is really essentially the story of what we're seeing happen, you know, over and over and over again in communities where people are still connecting, people are still answering an act of kindness with another act of kindness. And I think it's those small actions of kindness as we continue to uplift them and to label them, that's what will ultimately take us to a place where, you know, as the poet Rumi says, even in ruin, you can find treasure. And those are the treasures that we're hoping will multiply.
Janine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Pastor Mitchell, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you all so much. I really appreciate this.
Everett Mitchell is a Dane County Circuit Court judge and the pastor of Christ the Solid Rock Baptist Church in Madison. Janine Mohajer, Senior Director of Leadership at Interfaith Youth Corps. Just ahead, it's On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.